On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyatt.
And I'm Michael Tomalaris. Coming up tonight, 8 dead in New York after a ute ploughs through a bicycle path.
The front was completely smashed in and there was some smoke coming out of it. While all this is happening, I hear an officer yell that there is another suspect who ran into the park.
Also tonight, the standoff on Manus Island continues.
I walked around that centre yesterday and one of the questions I was asking myself is how have we lost our moral compass so badly?
And an attack on international students in Canberra makes headlines in China, with warnings for young people to reconsider studying in Australia.
All those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock with the news. I'm Mike Tomalaris. At least 8 people have been killed after a man drove a rented utility vehicle onto a busy cycle path near the World Trade Center site in New York City and hit several people. About a dozen others were injured in what authorities are treating as an act of terrorism. The incident is reminiscent of several deadly vehicle attacks across Europe during the past 15 months. Officials say the suspect was shot in the abdomen by police and taken into custody after he crashed the truck into a school bus and fled. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says it's a very painful day for the city.
Let me be clear that based on the information we have at this moment, this was an act of terror and a particularly cowardly act of terror aimed at innocent civilians, aimed at people going about their lives who had no idea what was about to hit them.
On social media, U.S. President Donald Trump says he has ordered the Department of Homeland Security to step up its extreme vetting program in the wake of the attack. U.S. media is naming the 29-year-old suspect as Saifulo Saipov, an Uzbek national who arrived in the U.S. in 2010. Back home, and traditional owners have voted to stop visitors climbing Uluru, with the ban to come into effect from 2019. In a statement, the Uluru Board of Management says the decision to close the climb was made after extensive consultation. The closure was possible under the terms of a park management plan if the proportion of climbers falls below 20%. Figures show only 16% of visitors made the climb during its open times between 2011 and 2015. Senate President Stephen Parry is to resign after receiving advice he holds British citizenship by descent. It was revealed on Tuesday that the Tasmanian senator, one of the Turnbull government's most senior figures, had sought advice from the British Home Office over his citizenship, with his father having moved to Australia as a child in 1951. This makes him the 8th parliamentarian and the first Liberal to be caught up in the scandal over dual citizenship. In a statement, Senator Parry says, due to the High Court's recent ruling on the dual citizenship status of 5 other politicians, he will step down without referring his case to the court. There are fears hundreds of asylum seekers and refugees remaining at the now-closed Manus Island Detention Centre will resort to self-harm after claims an Iranian man has already hurt himself. Power has been cut off to at least half the buildings, where around 600 men are refusing to leave. Greens Senator Nick McKim, who is on Manus Island, has labelled Immigration Minister Peter Dutton a monster over his handling of the facility's shutdown. Sudanese refugee Abdul Aziz Adams says many of the detainees did not sleep overnight and remain fearful of what will happen.
We were so scared that we haven't slept. We were thinking that they might come to attack the centre maybe at night time. So we were in a high alert. And also we put some guys like to keep eye, to keep watching if anything's going to happen. And we had a have a half part of the compound last night without power. And this morning as well, they came and took all the big generators.
Acting Prime Minister Julie Bishop says it doesn't make any sense for detainees to remain in the centre, but she won't guarantee their safety if they leave the camp. The husband of a Sydney woman who died after being doused in petrol and set alight nearly 4 years ago has been charged with her murder. 32-year-old Parwinder Kaur died in December 2013 after suffering burns to 90% of her body at a house in Sydney's northwestern suburbs. Police arrested the woman's 37-year-old husband, Kulwinder Singh, this morning. His father, Sukhdev Singh, spoke to SBS Punjabi's program.
The past 4 years have been hell for us. If you see his photo or meet him or ask where he works, in railways, even if one person out of 100 says that he is guilty, we will accept it. Nobody will say that he is guilty or can hurt someone. He is 100% innocent.
And Spain's High Court has summoned former Catalan president Carles Puigdemont and 13 members of his sacked administration to testify in court this week. The court has called on the Catalan leaders to appear in court on Thursday morning and says it has started processing rebellion and sedition charges against Mr. Puigdemont and the other Catalan leaders. And finally, a look at the weather for tomorrow, Thursday in Perth, partly cloudy, a top of 29 degrees. Adelaide, similar conditions, cooler, 21. In Melbourne, a shower or two, 16. Hobart, showers increasing, 14. Canberra, becoming cloudy, 23. In Sydney, partly cloudy, 23. Brisbane, sunny, 29. And Darwin, cloudy with a possible shower, 35 degrees. And Greg, that's it from me. More on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30.
Thanks, Michael. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio with Greg Diet. It's 6:07. Standoff between detainees and authorities at the Manus Island Detention Centre continues tonight, and the Greens say that it's a stain on Australia's conscience. Senator Nick McKim is the Greens' immigration spokesman and says he's appalled by what he's seeing on Manus Island. As Hannah Sinclair reports, there's no electricity nor running water at the centre after its generators were removed.
Australia's offshore immigration centre on Papua New Guinea's Manus Island has been officially closed, but a tense standoff is continuing between authorities and detainees. More than 600 refugees and asylum seekers remain inside the compound at the Lombram Naval Base. There is no running water nor electricity at the centre after generators were shut down and taken off site. Sudanese refugee Abdul Aziz Adam says many of the detainees did not sleep overnight and remained fearful of what will happen.
We were so scared that we haven't slept. We were thinking that they might come to attack the centre maybe at night time. So we were in a high alert. And also we put some guys like to keep eye, we keep watching if anything's going to happen. And we had a half part of the compound last night without power. And this morning as well, they came and took all the big generators, they turned them off, and then they took the generators. And right now, the whole compound is without power.
Authorities in Papua New Guinea have said they will remove refugees and asylum seekers into purpose-built accommodation in the nearby town of Loringau. But the detainees are not willing to leave because of safety concerns and say locals are blocking the construction of new refugee accommodation. Acting Prime Minister Julie Bishop has told Sky News essential services are available for those inside the centre and they should leave.
The PNG government is in charge of security matters. The alternative accommodation for refugees and also accommodation for those found not to be refugees is providing all the essential services, including food and water and electricity and medical supplies, so they have access to essential services. Those who are found not to be refugees, to be owed no protection at all, should return home.
Greens immigration spokesman Nick McKim on Manus Island says there are three alternative facilities where Papua New Guinea and Australia suggest the detainees go. But Senator McKim has told SBS one of the facilities is still an active construction site and not in a state to receive the detainees.
There's about 450 beds ready to go and there's over 600 guys in the centre. So if Julie Bishop or Peter Dutton or anyone else in the Australian government is claiming that today there are enough beds to accommodate the 600 detainees, they are just simply lying.
A PNG lawyer representing the group, Ben Lomai, says he lodged a legal application yesterday to block the centre's closure, and a decision is expected shortly. Mr. Lomai is arguing enforceable protections for human rights in the PNG constitution have been breached. Abdulaziz Adam, the Sudanese refugee, is 24 years old and has lived on Manus for 4.5 years. He has told SBS he wants the Australian government to reconsider resettlement offers from countries like New Zealand. He says, as a group, the men in the centre are focused on supporting each other.
In fact, we are supporting each other. We are supporting each other, and we are even united more than ever.
The Lombrum Centre was forced to close after the PNG Supreme Court ruled Australia's detention of refugees and asylum seekers there illegal and unconstitutional. 6 detainees have died on Manus Island, including one who was murdered, since it was reopened in 2012. Senator McKim says the Liberal and Labor parties are complicit in the situation on Manus Island. He says, especially after seeing the detention centre in person, he feels the detainees must be brought to freedom and safety.
It's just absolutely shameful. I mean, I walked around that centre yesterday, and one of the questions I was asking myself is how have we lost our moral compass so badly in this country, and how have we fallen so far? I mean, Australia could genuinely claim in the global context to have been a very, very strong defender of human rights for a long, long time. But we've just walked away from that history, and we are on a pathway of deliberately harming innocent people, depriving them of their liberties and their freedoms. And our human rights record is tarnished forever, and it's an absolute stain on the conscience of our country and on our international reputation.
Green Senator Nick McKim ending that report by Hannah Sinclair. The dual citizenship saga plaguing federal parliament has moved to a possibly bigger stage with revelations of the 8th parliamentarian to be caught up in it. This one is prompting calls for a full citizenship audit of the parliament. Nikki Canning reports.
One of the Turnbull government's most senior figures, Senate President Stephen Parry, is the latest politician and the first Liberal to reveal he's a dual citizen. Senator Parry was born in Tasmania, but his father migrated from Britain in 1951, making him a citizen by descent. It's quite a different story from the one the Senator focused on in his maiden speech to Parliament after his election in 2004.
I'm a Tasmanian by birth and come from a line of many generations of Tasmanians. In fact, I'm a descendant from the first Fleet convicts who arrived on January the 26th, 1788, on board the respective ships Scarborough and Prince of Wales.
Senator Parry has written to colleagues saying he's received confirmation from the British Home Office that he is a dual citizen under the provisions of the Australian Constitution. He says he'll resign tomorrow both as Senate President and as a Senator for Tasmania. The revelation of questions about Senator Parry's status follows a decision by the High Court last week to disqualify 5 other federal politicians because of their dual citizenship. Section 44 of the Constitution bans foreign nationals from sitting in Parliament, and the High Court ruled ignorance of dual citizenship is not a defence. Attorney General George Brandis is urging calm now over the latest twist.
Senator Parry has always understood that he is an Australian citizen and that his father was an Australian citizen. But in view of the High Court's decision last Friday, Senator Parry decided seek advice from the Home Office.
Greens leader Richard Di Natale's told the ABC action must be taken.
I had a suspicion there'd be more, and I suspect there'll be more again. We've entered, I think, constitutional crisis territory now, and it's really time for the Prime Minister and the opposition leader to show some leadership. We need to just end this. We need to end what's going on here, and the way to do it is to have a comprehensive audit of the status of all MPs, just to make sure if there's anybody else out there who's a dual citizen, we know about it, we deal with it all in one hit. At the moment, this is just distracting everybody from the business at hand, the business of governing.
But George Brandis says he doesn't agree with that approach.
People have come forward because they have appreciated that they have a problem. That has now happened in the case of 8 members of parliament. I do not know of any other member of parliament who has a problem, and I have no reason to believe that any other member of parliament does have a problem. And it's just illogical to say because there are some, there must be others.
Liberal MP Craig Kelly's told the ABC the Electoral Commission could potentially undertake an audit.
We make a lot of declarations. We have to declare all the donations that we receive, anything over $300. There's a lot of these declarations of directorship of companies and so on. We have to declare all those things on our forms. Now, I think there's no reason why that those declaration forms that we actually make should also include our citizenship.
But Acting Prime Minister Julie Bishop, speaking to Sky News, has tried to assure Australians everything is business as usual in Parliament.
We retain 75 out of the 149 seats in the Parliament. We have sufficient support from the crossbenchers on supply and confidence to ensure that the Parliament continues to work. Barnaby Joyce is facing a by-election in New England, and we hope that the people of New England will support him and that he'll be able to return to Parliament as soon as possible.
Acting Prime Minister Julie Bishop ending that report by Aileen Phillips. Still to come tonight, an Hazara refugee finds a second family in outback South Australia.
Narakot is a very lovely town and a very good, lovely community on there and very supporting community on there.
That story coming up soon. 19 past 6. The United States has yet again been confronted by what authorities are calling a suspected terrorist attack. A typical autumn day in New York turned deadly when a truck rammed into cars, then mowed people down on a bicycle path. At least 8 people have died and 11 are seriously injured. No Australians are believed to be involved. This report from Aileen Phillips.
On a day that was supposed to end with Halloween celebrations in New York City, commiserations took their place. In the middle of the afternoon, a man driving what's believed to have been a rented truck entered a bicycle path, striking a number of pedestrians and cyclists. The path runs parallel to the West Side Highway on the western edge of Manhattan along the Hudson River. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
They left the house this morning. They were enjoying the beautiful west side of Manhattan on a beautiful fall day, and they're not going to be returning home. And that shock and that pain is going to be very real.
The 29-year-old driver, identified in U.S. media reports as Uzbekistan immigrant Saifullo Saipov, proceeded to collide with the school bus, injuring 2 more adults and 2 children. New York Police Commissioner James O'Neill says the man then stepped out of the truck brandishing 2 guns.
A uniformed police officer assigned to the first precinct confronted the subject and shot him in the abdomen. The subject was wounded and transported to a local hospital. A paintball gun and a pellet gun were recovered at the scene.
Police have not confirmed witness reports that the driver shouted Allahu Akbar, Arabic for God is greatest. They've confirmed he shouted something when he exited the vehicle, but they're not providing further details. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says it's a painful day, but he says the city has been tested before.
New Yorkers do not give in the face of these kinds of actions. We'll respond as we always do. We will be undeterred.
Authorities say additional police officers will now be deployed throughout the coming days, with locals urged to be vigilant. President Donald Trump has responded on social media, tweeting, "In New York City, looks like another attack by a very sick and deranged person. Law enforcement is following this closely, not in the USA." But it's a scene becoming all too familiar around the world. In July 2016, a truck rammed into a crowd in France, killing 87 people. Just months later, a truck driven into a market in Germany killed 12. And this year, 8 people were killed on London Bridge and 14 in Spain when trucks mowed down pedestrians. Andrew Cuomo says it appears to be a typical so-called lone wolf attack.
At this point, there's no evidence to suggest a wider plot or a wider scheme, but the actions of one individual who meant to cause pain and harm and probably death and the resulting terror.
In Australia, RMIT Professor of Human Security and International Diplomacy Joe Syracuse told Sky News they are low-tech plots, but the consequences are wide-reaching.
One character like this can bring a great city to its knees. Commerce, education, finance, everything stops while we all try to figure out what's going on.
Joe Syracuse ending that report by Aileen Phillips. Coming up on the show, an attack on international students in Canberra makes headlines in China, with warnings for young people to reconsider studying in Australia.
There is the fear among Chinese students now that this issue has led to a certain amount of tension between the students, like because of, I think, misleading news.
23 past 6 now. Well, now to the story of Hafez Ula. He arrived in Australia with just $24, seeking asylum and fleeing persecution in Pakistan. The Afghan Azara man hoped to find work in regional South Australia. What he also found was a second family in a tiny country community. Rhiannon Elston has the story.
Hafez Ula came to Australia 4 years ago, seeking refuge from persecution. The Afghan Hazara man left his wife and children behind in Pakistan, making a dangerous journey to Australia by boat. He spent almost 5 months in a Brisbane detention centre before being granted a safe haven visa.
I am as a asylum seeker come to Australia because my country is not safe on there, killing for Hazara killings now.
Following suggestions from friends, he moved to regional South Australia for work. He eventually saved enough money to open a restaurant in Narra Court, a town of just 6,000 people near the Victorian border. His Indian-style cuisine has made a big impact on the town. Alana Johnson has been getting work experience at the Pearl Indian Cuisine restaurant and says it has helped broaden her horizons.
I like doing all this waitressing and trying different tastes in cultural foods. Never had Indian before. First time I had it, absolutely loved it.
Mr. Rula says the lower cost of doing business in a regional area makes his venture more viable. But it wasn't just opportunity that drew him to the region.
Narra Court is a very lovely town and a very good, lovely community on there and very supporting community on there.
Jenny Sterling of the Australian Migrant Resource Centre at Narra Court says he has worked to create a second family of sorts out of the local community.
You know, we have Hafez Ula working his guts out here and producing such a great experience for us and volunteering in the community, partly because he doesn't have his family here.
Mr. Ula helps train young business students at his restaurant and is a member of the local Rotary Club. As regional commander of the Limestone Coast Rural Fire Service, John Probert explains, he has cooked up a novel way of supporting his community during times of crisis.
Because of his business, he can't work as a firefighter, but he can certainly provide food for our volunteers and hopefully for staff as well. And he's already supplied some meals and it's been very well received. It's terrific.
Mr. Ula says he came up with the idea after watching weary volunteer firefighters travel more than 30 kilometres to eat lunch during a major bushfire in the Mount Gambier region in 2014. This coming bushfire season, he has plans to shut his restaurant and focus on supplying food to firefighting volunteers if there is a major fire in the area.
Important the community work more than money for me. And any time need for volunteers, I am worked for community. And I offer to my region, the CFS, 24-hour, 7 days, 12 months. I just run and call. Every time I'm ready for making food for community.
Hafez Ula is part of a growing number of Afghan Hazara migrants choosing to stay and settle in Narra Court. Narra Court's Mayor Erica Vickery says migrants from overseas are helping to boost a population that would otherwise be at risk of decline.
And there was a very slight decrease, but we're holding our own, particularly now that we have our migrant people coming to Narra Court.
Now Record Mayor Erica Vickery wrapping up that story by Rhiannon Elston. An attack on international students in Canberra last week has made headlines in China, with warnings for young people to reconsider studying here. Chinese students say the negative criticism has only escalated their fears of harassment and abuse in the capital. Kirsty Johansson reports.
It is an image of Australia rarely seen. Chinese high school students bashed at a bus interchange in Canberra, making headlines in major news publications across China. Chinese media videos are now warning the capital is no longer a safe place for foreigners to live and study. A Chinese student who attends the same school as the victims, but doesn't want to be identified, says after the attack last week, many students are afraid to walk around by themselves.
There is the fear among Chinese students now that this issue has led to a certain amount of tension between the students, like because of, I think, misleading news and stuff. People are very fear.
While she believes the attack that left one Chinese student in hospital was not racially motivated, other students' posts on social media show they think otherwise.
There are definitely a lot of people who still think this is a racial issue, so they think they're very offended and they believe the way they deal with this is to fight back.
ACT Chinese Australian Association President Chin Wong says Chinese students are being harassed and targeted more and more.
They are complaints and they are reports in terms of harassment, or students, you know, when they're on the bus and people from the back more or less, you know, say things, shout at them. We have alerted the police and the government is to pay more attention to work with the students.
Two juveniles have faced court over the alleged attack. International education is Canberra's largest export and more than 19,000 foreign students live in the capital. Lowy Institute East Asia Program Director Meriden Verall says she hopes that will not change anytime soon.
I don't think it's going to have a dramatic and immediate impact, but I think it's adding into this general kind of perception that Australia is not such a favourable place. And as far as Chinese students go coming to Australia, there are plenty of other options for them.
The Australian Capital Territory Department of Education says it has made support services available to international students to remind them about personal safety.
Kirsty Johansson with that story. A look at the news headlines now. Shinzo Abe has been re-elected Prime Minister of Japan just days ahead of a visit by the US President Donald Trump, expected to be dominated by concerns over a volatile North Korea. The West Australian government has formally apologised to West Australian men who were convicted of homosexual offences under historic laws. And a report from UNICEF has revealed that 15 million girls aged between 15 and 19 have been forced to engage in sexual acts against their will worldwide. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see SBS News right across Australia right now. You can also see it by live streaming it on our website at sbs.com.au/news. I'm Greg Dyett. Thanks for listening.